you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Woo-hoo!
Woo! That's right, guys. It's podcast time again. I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me is Anthony Evans.
Hello.
Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
So this week, our film of choice to talk about was Death to Smoochie. Yeah, weird name, I know. And it was Jamie's pick, so he will give you the details and tell you who's in it and that. Jamie.
Death to Smoochie is from 2002. It was directed by Danny DeVito and written by Adam Resnick. Kids show host Rainbow Randolph is fired in disgrace while his replacement, Sheldon Mopes, a.k.a. Smoochie the Rhino, finds himself a rising star. Unfortunately for Sheldon, the kids' TV business isn't all child's play. And it has quite the cast. Robin Williams, Edward Norton, Catherine Keener, Danny DeVito, John Stewart, Pam Ferris... Harvey Fierstein.
Not bad.
It's that guy film. Mm. Like, outside of the main cast of Robin Williams and Edward Norton and Danny DeVito, there's a lot of, oh, hey, it's him.
Yeah.
And the film was a massive flop when it came out.
And still is.
Yes, yes and no.
It has its moments, certainly. I think there's definitely a lot of comedy that they get right.
I like, it's always a good comedy when you go, well, there's definitely some comedy in it. It's definitely got comedy in it. Whether we can call it all a comedy.
it's just a strange one. I don't know, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
It blew my mind when I found out this was 2002. This has got 1996 written all over it.
I know.
So, Jamie, you picked it. I have a feeling you hadn't watched it before, though. So you just suggested it as a I'm curious, right? Or no?
Well, I like Robin Williams. He was one of those, like, divisive... Like, some people hated him and thought he tried too hard to be funny all the time.
Weirdly, I hate him in these really pretentious ones that won awards, like Good Will Hunting and Dead Poets Society. I kind of find those grating and tedious. And
some people embrace the more middling
stuff like Jumanji and Hook. And
yeah, because people would say like he'd try too hard to be serious in stuff like that, or he'd try too hard to be like wacky all the time in other
stuff. You can't
win. And
you can't win. Either one or the other.
It's the Jim Carrey problem. Like when he's being funny, he's like he's like that kid in school when you're about 13 who thought he was hilarious and was just like, oh, I'm the class clown, is on all the time, and you just want to say, just fuck off, have a day off, Jesus Christ. But
Robin Williams is, I think, more tolerable than Jim Carrey.
Yeah, and I think I've liked him since I was a kid. I used to watch Mork and Mindy, and like I loved like Aladdin when I was a kid. And I wanted to pick. I wouldn't say I like his more serious roles, like Good Will Hunting and stuff like that. I like his darker ones, and I wish he'd done more of them. I like 1 Hour Photo.
Mm-hmm.
Insomnia, I thought was really good, where he plays a kind of paedophile, like murderer.
Is that the one with Al Pacino in as well?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I have seen that one. Yeah.
There's another one I'm thinking of.
Will's Greatest Dad. He himself isn't quite dark, but the film has
or,
his moments.
One I like really, really, absolutely love is The Fisher King. And everybody knows now that we've done The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, I have a very love-hate relationship with Terry Gilliam. I think The Fisher King is absolutely brilliant, and I think Robin Williams is fantastic in it, especially in like, because I wanted to do a Robin Williams serious-ish roles thing a while ago, but he died, and I didn't want to do it too close to then to make it seem like we were doing a memorial.
God forbid we pay tribute to someone.
Yeah,
but I know what you mean. It feels like you're trying to get cashing in on the moment, and
I
Robin Williams too much to be like, oh, he's dead, let's celebrate him for our own personal interests.
I think the consensus was to wait for a while, and it's been quite a while now since that. And but watching like The Fisher King after everything came out about him and his struggles with mental illness and depression and stuff, The Fisher King in particular now is really, like, if you watch it now, you realise he's kind of playing himself.
Crazy.
I don't remember it that well, unfortunately.
Well, the thing is, he's this wacky character, but he's deeply haunted, and he's got this, like, black knight figure who chases him and turns up whenever he's truly happy and ruins it. And it's like, you know, that's interesting to consider in light of what happened, what came out with his struggles with depression and stuff. And I would actually say that, like, Death to Smoochie, which is one of the ones I haven't seen, he's also playing himself in this, but he's almost playing, like, a parody of himself, like how he sees himself.
Like, turned up a few notches from, I know, say him playing Mork, which is quite an innocent, wacky role, yeah. And then the real Robin Williams is a bit more, I don't know, shocking and adult.
Yeah, it seems like in this film, he's playing up his own darker side. Like, he's playing what he might have ended up as, or, like, an element of himself that he doesn't like. Like, this kid's entertainer who's, like, got this really, like, mean streak to him and is also, like, kind of lost and hollow and a little bit, like, borderline psychotic. And I just wanted to see it. And I think Danny DeVito is an interesting director. I think, Matilda was great. And Danny DeVito directed Matilda. And it was... Like, Danny DeVito, he has this mean streak to him. The fact that he adapted Matilda, that he adapted a Roald Dahl book, is perfect, because this film, Death to Smoochie, is kind of like if Roald Dahl wrote, like, a Hollywood critique. Because it's got that same kind of, like, really fairy tale, dark, grotesque kind of humour to it that Roald Dahl stuff had. And Danny DeVito seems to try and, like, carry that torch into stuff. Unfortunately, this is probably overall a miss for his back catalogue. And I think I was expecting something, or I guess I was hoping for something a bit more focused. Like, I thought it was entirely going to be about Robin Williams and Edward Norton. And it kind of spirals into this weird mob story thing.
It sort of adds a lot of unnecessary elements, one of which is, like, an Irish gang.
And, like, a lot of it's, like, funny taken by itself. But altogether, like, especially as it builds and builds, the more complicated it gets, the more it unravels and just doesn't go anywhere. And I ended up being pretty disappointed by the end. But, like, I didn't know what I was expecting, to be honest.
But it was out of curiosity that you put it to us.
Yeah, it was just curiosity. And I like seeing Robin Williams play darker roles, particularly when he plays them still for comedy, but a different type of comedy.
Sure. Yeah, Fisher King is an interesting one. I have my problems. I'm more lukewarm to it than you are. But I would say, Robin Williams is good when he mixes the comedy and zaniness with a bit of light. Like Good Morning Vietnam, I think is a very good one, because it's full Robin Williams wacky voices and entertainer, but also because it's like a war drama, it's much more serious at times as well. And it's probably the best combination that he's done. But, you know, so I'm a Robin Williams fan. Less of his stand-up, I somehow find it not as interesting as his other work, but...
When, again, coming back to, like, everything that came out after he died, and this that he was, like, bipolar and stuff, you can see the problem he probably had was that, like, when he'd hit the stage, especially in the 70s, like, he was notorious in his, like, drug problems. And he was always very manic, like he was constantly on.
Well, he seemed addicted also, other than all the things he was actually addicted to, he seemed addicted to people's laughter and just wanted to constantly be...
I think the impression I get is that the reason he was, like, doing a million voices and like, screaming most of the time was it was a way to, like, shut up whatever was going on inside his head.
Then...
The problem he probably had after that, and again, I am, you know, I'm just wildly speculating, is that whenever he appeared in public, he had to be that Robin Williams. And if he was bipolar, that would mean that there were times when he just felt like he could not do it, but he'd have to, because that's what people would expect. And that just sounds like torture for however many years he was famous.
I'm trying to cultivate in my mind a sort of an analogy where he's like the genie in the lamp, like in Aladdin, where he is brilliant and entertaining, but really he just wants to be free and not shackled to this zany character.
And it's you can see, you know, he's in an interview and he's like, and doing like all his voices and stuff.
Yeah.
And in his head, he's just wishing that he was at home playing a Zelda game.
I think you're projecting a little now, Jamie.
No, he was a huge video game fan. In particular, that's his daughter Zelda is named after Princess Zelda.
Okay.
Yeah, he appeared in ads for those 3D remakes of Ocarina of Time and stuff on the Nintendo DS with his massive beard and playing it with his daughter.
Oh, fair play. Like, no, yeah, I remember those. Yeah, I remember him in the Nintendo ad. Yeah.
Was a huge video game fan and general nerd. I think there's a Neon Genesis Evangelion reference in One Hour Photo that he put in there and deliberately messed up because he knew it would annoy anime. he was a massive nerd. So all the stuff that came out after he died, which is unfortunately always the way. Like all this stuff comes out and you think, wow. There's way more to this person than like their public persona ever let on.
Mm.
So Anthony, what was your relationship I know you related to Robin Williams. No, what I mean is, what did you think of Robin Williams? What were you expecting from Death to Smoochie?
Well, that's pretty much all I had to go on, was that it was a film directed by Danny DeVito and starring Robin Williams. And we have a bit of a history with Robin Williams here at Spoilerfield.
I think Popeye was the first one.
Toys, I think it was.
Oh, you're right, the very number two.
Yeah.
Me and you, Anthony. How could I forget?
And I think Robin Williams is very hit and miss when it comes to his films. And because that's all I really had to go on. I really didn't know. I kind of liked the idea of the film. I thought it could be quite fun, and while I don't think this kind of style worked perfectly in Matilda, it's interesting, his kind of style of filmmaking, and I was interested to see where he took it, at least. So hard to judge. I think I thought it was going to be better than it was.
But then it is a little bit obscure as well, despite its weird name. You'd think if it was good, people would remember a stupid name like Death Smoochie. But, you know.
Plus, I wasn't really that familiar with Danny DeVito's directing back catalogue.
Sure.
I've looked it up since, and he's done a couple of things that I've heard of, like The War of the Roses and A Hoffa. These are decent films. So I had good hope.
Yeah. What about you, Abby?
I knew virtually nothing about this. I pretty much went from the poster, which looked irritating.
It was kind of irritating. It was kind of an irritating poster from a sort of graphic design point of view as well. It's just a sort of a bit cheap looking and interesting.
I do have a general dislike of posters where someone is looking exactly down lens.
Bit hard to avoid that sometimes.
No, mostly, but they've done it deliberately in composition. It just creeps me out. And it always makes me... I don't think there's ever been a film where someone has directly looked down camera in the composition. It's been a good film.
Well, that's a difficult rule to check. I mean, that's an easy rule to check, but I don't think that's true. I can appreciate what you're saying, though, but I don't know. I'm now worrying about every poster, thinking, is the reason Abby doesn't like a film, not that it's not good, is it just because they looked her in the eye? are you a Robin Williams fan? Where do you stand on him? Or Ed Norton, we haven't talked about him, he's one of the other...
That's true, he is the main character.
I think that's another thing I wasn't expecting as well, was that Ed Norton's actually the main character. Robin Williams is in it less than I thought he would be.
Mm.
Sure.
Well, the thing about Robin Williams is, I know that he can give a good performance, and when he's on form, he's fantastic. But it's a little bit of a lottery.
Yeah.
In terms of his films. Yeah.
We're all the same page, hit and miss, and kudos. Nice back catalogue of stuff to pick and choose from. But
Ed Norton, it's just sort of like, there's a reason Ed Norton makes serious films.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He's kind of charismatic and funny in some stuff. You know?
Yeah, I was surprised because he comes across these days as very self-serious and, take me seriously. I'm an artist kind of thing. I thought it was interesting that in this, as Sheldon, he plays what I think he's like in real life.
dorky idiot.
Yeah, no, I mean, all about like how important his work is. And...
Well, the righteous side of him that's all about eating soybeans and being a weird vegan or something. Death to Smoochie, as you sort of said in your intro, is essentially about a scandal about a children's entertainer. That is Robin Williams to begin with, playing Rainbow Randolph? Gandalf? What's his name?
Rainbow Randolph.
Actually, come to think of it, they name dropped, and like Ed Norton's character name drops a children's entertainer that him and the love interest both love, and it was like a hippo called something really weird, like Ricketts the hippo or something.
Yeah, it was Ricketts.
Why the hell would there be a children's character called Ricketts? It's like it's just a horrible disease that old people get, isn't it?
Danny DeVito just has a surprisingly dark sense of humour.
Fucked up childhood, yeah.
Yeah, and he just puts in all these, like, and, like, some of them are really funny, and some of them are just like, what?
Yeah. Because Smoochie sounds a little bit creepy as a name. Like, you're expecting lots of kisses from this rhino. But that sounds like a kid's programme name. Rainbow is the only part that's friendly about Robin Williams' character's name. So this rainbow retard has been booted from the television programme where he seemingly is just a bloke in a top hat with a rainbow suit who dances about and does saccharine kind of horrible singy dance numbers with children.
Yeah.
And that he's selling opportunities for children
involved,
he's
involved in whatever this weird mob business is that like only serves to confuse the shit out of the viewer as more is revealed.
Yeah, for some reason there's the scandal's a bit confusing because initially it's just Robin Williams is selling the opportunity for children to appear more predominantly in the show.
Well,
to the parents as a treat, and he gets done for this.
He's corrupt in some way. He's involved in stuff he shouldn't be, and he's found out and he's fired. And they want someone like squeaky fucking clean, I think was the quote from the studio head.
Mm. But the overall conspiracy involves producers and possibly criminal charity organizations.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the more it reveals, the more questions come up because it never quite explains what is actually happening.
Yeah.
And it just piles more on in there. And yeah, Harvey Fierstein is a mob boss, which is weird, because he's either Carl from The Simpsons, or he's that little guy in Independence Day who's like, I gotta call my mom. Like,
isn't he Mrs. Doubtfire as well?
Yes,
like
he is.
Makeup guy.
Yeah,
is he also some lizard in something?
In real life.
yeah,
he does sound like a lizard.
I've got this vague recollection of him singing a song about if I'm gonna meet somebody, it may as well be you.
It's very vivid if you've made it up.
It might be Thursday.
Well done. You should write that down if you actually invented that.
Nevertheless, we need the squeaky clean guy. The squeaky clean guy is Ed Norton playing some weird dorky Burke who's really got full of good intentions, but is a bit deluded because he dresses up in methadone clinic on Coney Island, and he plays guitar songs to people who have kind of had their small dose of meth, and he dresses up in like a pink kind of American football helmet that's been turned into a rhino head with weird like pink claws. Yeah. And he just happily plays guitar like an oblivious kind of Forrest Gump type to these people. And that's where he is when he's found by how did even the TV executives hear of him? He's super squeaky clean, but how do you even know?
I guess there's this idea that they have this, like, a database or list of people who do this kind of shit that they have.
Tedious so, like, people who entertain children.
Yeah.
And then they went through the like, you know, crimes they'd all committed, and he was, like, one of the few who was, like, free crime. Yeah, you know, but, you know, they send... Is John Stewart sends his...
With the weirdest haircut ever.
Doesn't he? Yeah. His hair needs to be up, doesn't it? Yeah. Cannot be down with a weird fringe going on.
Weird haircuts, though. What is Ed Norton's haircut in this for?
It kind of progresses kind of as it goes on as well, doesn't it? It's just this weird trailer park,
almost
back and sides shaved off thing,
Yeah.
What is he... Yeah, what's that about? And it makes him look more special needs, because there's kind of a... there's a general vibe of someone this naive must have something mentally wrong with them. Like, but actually he doesn't. He's just an innocent, nice, well-meaning man. And has a weird barber.
They try and paint people who are... Assuming he's vegan.
Yeah, he just has weird food preferences that involve, you know, less gluten.
Because he's
more,
got that soy hot dog or whatever.
With black sauce on.
Which is actually a real thing that Ed Norton invented.
Are you serious? You yank him a chain. He didn't invent... No. Well, that's a real edible sauce.
No, no, I mean, it was when they put it on that hot dog in this film. I don't know if it caught on and he sold it.
But did Ed Norton actually make that?
Yeah, he concocted it in his hotel room when they were coming up with ideas.
They're trying to make it out that it's really weird that he does all these things. But from our point of view, quite a lot of people do that now.
It is a very... forward-looking film in terms of vegans and new age health bollocks from somebody who is clearly naive and clueless.
And actually, the kind of TV that they portray Smoochie doing actually is more like the TV we have these days. It is a little more focused on the educational and I'm thinking of Lazytown specifically, which really kind of promotes kind of healthy eating and exercise and stuff like that.
You've got to have your sports candy. apples
it
and vegetables.
Is kind of a little bit predictive.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, there are elements to this film that are good, and it as the film goes on, it becomes frustrating because they all just kind of fall away.
But like I think Abby was saying, it's almost as if they go, get this ass clown. He's into weird alternative foods that aren't bad for you. He must be a complete schmo idiot douche. What a dork. He's obviously an idiot who's wrong. And actually, it's like, no, all of his points are valid and aren't comedy. They're just a lifestyle you can choose is to, you know, have a slightly more considerate and ethical, maybe slightly vegan-y lifestyle. That's fine. And promoting education and ethics in children's programs, also, that's normal and fine.
But it's played against people who are very jaded and know how the system works. Like, and it's the problem is this. Like, this is a film almost entirely made up of ideas that didn't go any further than I have an idea. Like, none of them have been, like, developed beyond, like, almost like a draft state. Like, he mentions that he had anger management classes at one point. And there are a couple of times where he, like, almost gets to the point where he seems like he's actually going to flip out. And he's, like, he's so nice. It's, like, something he's doing as a, like, a mechanism he's learned. Mm. And I was expecting it to come out that he had, like, some kind of history. And it just doesn't.
Yeah, because on the surface, it's just a straight up satire and spoof of the television system, especially for children's programs. And it's obviously off the back of stuff like Barney the Dinosaur, because Barney the Dinosaur is the most saccharine educational PC program, with its just constant tedious singing and little children being happy because a big purple dinosaur is grinning at them.
I like the way your children being happy.
Oh, but there's, you know,
never was.
British children's programs are usually just a bit weird because a couple of like middle-aged blokes have got some like dolls and animated them, and they they tell a weird surreal story. But Americans, like, it's just singing and saying love each other and stuff, which is too on the nose for me.
This is the difference. Americans grow up with TV shows like Barney the Dinosaur or whatever else, and it's all very, like, you know, positive. Sesame Street. British kids grow up with British kids grow up with shows that are designed to traumatize them. Like, I
have... And the twist.
That's Australian, in fairness.
Yeah. Oh, but I have nightmares now as a man about Chawton and the Wheelies. Fucking... Yeah. That left me with PTSD. Stop it and tidy up with those monsters that go... Bruh.
Well, they're all just weird, aren't they? They're all just... what? It's just an experience of someone else's nightmare.
Yeah, that's British kids' shows. It's fuck you, children. I grew up in a fucking mine. You don't have to. So I'm going to scrawl this terrifying nonsense and shove it in your face. That's British kids' TV.
But that, and how we... We put the voiceover on the Magic Roundabout without having any concept of what it was actually about.
Yeah.
Yeah, just pure, well, the French don't know what they're doing. We'll redub this with our own logic and words. But, like, just generally, it's a bit more on the... Like, Sesame Street's quite a good children's programme for little kids. But some of the other stuff... Barney the Dinosaur, which is a kind of template for Smoochy and the parody, is just let's blatantly sing... rhymes at each other about obvious stuff like love each other and be nice. And...
Yeah, I think it's the Sesame Street is an impossibly high watermark, because I used to watch it when I was a kid, and it's been on for several hundred years, and it's it's like it's always been like it's the kids' show. Like it's great, and it's great for each generation that watches Sesame Street. It's always great, and it's aimed at that generation perfectly.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, stuff like Barney the Dinosaur is, like, it's got this kind of experimental, like, throwing shit at the wall in the 90s, like, oh, colourful dinosaurs.
All we need is, like, weird noises and colours. It's just a bit too moronic, I think. It doesn't, it's not challenging. Like
the good thing about something like Sesame Street is it talks to its audience well, but it doesn't patronize them, whereas something like Barney the Dinosaur is patronizing. And I think that's one of the things that this film does get right, is the way that a lot of kids' TV is really just patronizing to kids who don't need to be patronized that much.
Yeah, it's just sing along and catchphrases and just teaching you to learn slogans and stuff.
Yeah, and then you've got the opposite end of it, which, and again, it's one of the things that the film does right. That bit where they're sitting with Sheldon and they're like, they've got all like the Smoochy merchandise, and he's like, hang on. So they just lock him out of the office. So this, he chucks the frisbee at him.
Like a dog, like an idiot dog. Yeah. Locked in.
Like, I think it's the film works when they play him like an idiot like that. He's so naive, he just doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And there is a nicely done kind of slow turn as he does kind of start to realise.
Yeah, I think one of the problems, though, because if he was coming to a realisation that he's just a patsy and a rube, and he sort of learnt a lesson, but all that happens is DeVito comes along as a character, and he's just this slightly money-grabbing agent guy who's like sees him as a mug who's going to... He's basically just an agent there to use him.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, we'll get loads of money first, then you can do all your hippie shit afterwards.
Yeah.
And from that, that's kind of a shame in a way that he comes in and does that. And when Ed Norton could have had a better struggle on his own, it might have been a more interesting...
Yeah, no, like I said, right at the start, like, I thought this film was going to be pretty much just about Rainbow Randolph and Smoochy, like, and, you know, Robin Williams. And it is for a bit, and then it's not. And
there's
then,
too many
like,
bad guys, isn't there? There's Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
There's Rainbow Knobhead, who's been fired. And then there's the mob. And then for a minute, you're thinking, well, the Irish mob are going to be bad guys. And then
they're not.
There's a producer guy who's extra evil and it's a bit weird.
They really mix it up badly as to like who is the real kind of bad guy.
What is the threat here? Like, what's happening? And now there's an ice show. Okay, well, here's Vincent Schiavelli for the last 20 minutes. Now he's a villain as well.
That ice show.
And it was a really odd decision right at the end to make Danny DeVito the kind of main bad guy.
Even though he
didn't feel right. I think the guy, what was his name? The who heads the charity.
Lizard Man.
Harvey Fierstein.
Because the way they give him the most kind of attention and made him seem the most sinister, but really he was kind of dispatched halfway through, and it's like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Extra weird. They sort of are saying, basically, for no reason at all, the Irish mob. This is the weird thing. Okay, so Ed Norton gets the gig as Smoochie. He's a success. They're marketing him this purple stupid rhino who sings and dances and is jolly and has an ethical thing going on. He is successful and he's sort of working in the TV industry. But by chance, he has a meeting in an Irish pub where there's a really moronic ex-boxer host in the pub. And he's just this stupid idiot character that Ed Norton befriends, and that is a reason why because the Irish mob are affiliated with this boxer guy. They all go, oh, we can make some money, let's force him to put our boxer in a TV show. And from that point on, you're like, oh, these Irish gangsters are trouble. But no, they're not. Yeah. They're going to help kill the other bad guy. And we're all going to sit there going, oh, that's fine. The Irish mob have just killed a guy. They decapitated him. And no consequences for them, even though they're intrinsically evil.
Yeah, it's a really, there's so many characters. And, you've already got, the core story that the film begins with between Robin Williams and Ed Norton is all it needs.
It's a good idea. It's a really... Because basically, you've got two things to show. Ed Norton struggling to be this naive goofball, struggling with the TV executives and getting his way, and being corrupted by the, you know, branding changes or the direction they want to go in. And then cut to, Robin Williams being... increasing his frustration and blaming Smoochie for his downfall.
And going, more and more insane.
And crazy and making attempts on his life and stuff. Yeah,
and that is where it starts to go, and then it doesn't.
That's not enough. We have to have another five bad guys. Yeah. And as I think you mentioned it, Abby, I'd even forgotten. Yeah, there's just, the last guy is an ex... TV, another stupidly named...
That's the thing, though. It says, this guy was on TV as well, but he's, and now he's a heroin addict. And they don't show anything of him having ever been on TV. They just say it a couple of times.
His name's Boonie Bobo, some random name. And he's
Buggy Ding Dong.
Sorry, that's his name.
Buggy Ding Dong.
What was his name, Abby?
Buggy Ding Dong.
Buggy, is that really it? So Buggy Ding Dong. And they missed an opportunity here. A, they shouldn't have had him. He was just a needless snipering... children's presenter who has lost his...
He's
problems.
So high on smack, he falls asleep.
Yeah. And then, this is the thing, right? He tries to execute Smoochie, and he fails. And they establish that he's a drug addict. And they also established that Ed Norton's character is going to be setting up... rebuilding the clinic that he used to work in for drug addicts. And so you're like, oh, well, obviously the sniper guy will fail. And then we'll show him at the end in the rehab and happy endings for everyone. And no, he falls to his death and dies on the ice in front of loads of children and ice skating midgets dressed as rhinos.
They didn't even plant him at the methadone clinic, did they, at the start?
No. It was just a missed opportunity.
He just turns up. It was as they were filming. Because Vincent Scavelli was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Danny DeVito. And that was...
Amadeus as well, I think he was in that, wasn't he?
Yes, he's he's been in all kinds of stuff. He also sadly died a while ago. But Danny DeVito's first film was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I don't know if it was Vincent Scavelli's. It might have been. But anyway, they obviously probably met and became friends then. And it's almost like Vincent Scavelli turned up on set knowing he just visiting his friend Danny DeVito as he was making another film. And Danny DeVito went, do you want to be in it? As they were completing filming, he's like, do you want to have a laugh? And he's like, yeah, all right. And they just invent this character at the last minute.
I was just annoyed because they set it up as if that's where we're going with this. He's going to be in the drug clinic place. And it just didn't go there. It really should have. And he was so brutally just in the film, just dying because he fell and couldn't grab on. And if he'd have stayed asleep, he would have lived. He would have just messed up the attempt on his...
It's a shame to waste someone like him, because he's one of those great, bit part character actors. He was so funny looking.
Yeah.
And he was so, he was always great as the... Because one of my favourite, minor roles he's had was in the Tomorrow Never Dies, the Bond movie.
Right.
Where he's the German doctor who's, an expert in torture. And he's only in it for, one scene, but it is the best scene of that film. it's brilliant. And he's great. So I'm always really happy when he turns up. So when he turned up in this and then it was just shit, I was really disappointed. It's just, I don't know, there's so many, just, like, something will be introduced, and I'll be like, oh, this is going to be good, and then it's not. It's just, yeah. Or the escalation of Rainbow Randolph's character and the things he's trying to do to Smoochie, and, like, how cartoony, like, almost like Wile E. Coyote it is. With him that is a perfect, like, representation of the fact that the film ended up being really misguided. And it's when... I can't remember what he'd done, but he, like, dances in the street by himself.
I thought that was quite funny, because he's a children's entertainer, and yeah, he successfully ruins the career of Smoochie.
Yeah, yeah. And, oh, that's it. He sets him up at the Nazi rally.
I like how you forgot. You forgot that he led him to... This is a weird chain of events, actually. He folds up Ed Norton with a weird accent. Then he has a different accent in the limo, as he pretends to be a Scottish bloke with a beard. Yeah, like, has a weird bit of banter where he tries to get Ed Norton to say how much he fucking hates Rainbow Randolph. And none of this goes anywhere. There's just, just through there's the gig. And then he's like tricked into performing at a Nazi place. They're like in a dorm with loads of JCBs. And then they're at a Nazi rally. And it's weird.
But that's what I mean. Like, that whole sequence where he, like, fools him into the Nazi rally and, like, takes pictures and then dances in the street afterwards. And then there's that one shot of, like, there's a panning shot as he's dancing and then he hits a wall and it goes into something else.
Mm.
At that point, it's taken on this, like, Roadrunner cartoon thing. I can kind of get on board with this. Like, it's stupid.
I kind of thought it was funny, that bit.
Yeah, it's so over the top and absurd that all right, fine. And then it just all of that turns into this weird, like, oh, yeah, we'll help you rebuild your reputation after being photographed at a Nazi rally. It's like, hang on a minute. What? Like, and also, this is Randolph's... Where did he get these fucking Nazis from? And how is he now...
having a rally.
Yeah, and how is he now being painted as, like, a tragic figure?
Because it happens very quick as well. Basically, the Irish mob, who are part of the story, figure it all out and kill someone or something. They basically just go, yeah, Robin Williams did it. That's solved. Let's see you cut to them in court. It happened really quickly. He got out of the tragic problem.
And then he tries to kill himself in the middle of Times Square. And it turns into one of the saddest scenes I've possibly seen in a film, where he pours petrol all over himself. And then a little girl comes and calls him Rainbow Randolph and says, stops. And he cries in such a serious and, like, this is suddenly a fucking drama way. And I was like, hang on a minute. Now, this is way darker than the rest of the film, which is already fucking dark.
And then they all fuck off because Smoochie's turned up in a limo.
The little girl put, like, the Smoochie hat on, and I'm like... He's like, what does it all mean? It's like, man, there's something really not okay going on under the surface of this film.
But this is the weird tone problem. Is sometimes it's really adult, especially with the swearing and stuff. Yeah. It's really aggressive and violent at times, and sweary. Mm. Very, very, like, sometimes very funny and creative swearing. And then it's got the general tone is very family friendly. It's a very broad children's type comedy, but it couldn't possibly be for all of them.
Like Abby said, it's got this, like, 1996 PG, like, Mrs. Doubtfire kind of feel all the way through it. And then Robin Williams phones up Ed Norton and says, I'm going on safari, motherfucker, safari, which is one of the best parts of the film. And again, it's one of those moments where I was like, okay, this is going somewhere. And then it fucking doesn't, and it's so frustrating.
So, does anyone else have any other bits that sort of are good examples of where the movie stopped being good and started to irk you?
I don't think it's that so much. It was good just often enough to make me annoyed about the rest.
Yeah, I stuck with it hoping it would get better, and it just never does. And it's like, oh, there's so many good little moments in it, and they just don't add up to anything.
Yeah.
For me, I think there were just a few too many, like, Robin Williams rants. Like Danny DeVito just said, like, go on, do your thing.
Yeah.
And just there was just a few and too again, many of them.
Like, you can tell there's little ad libs he's done in there that are funny. There's a bit where he actually spills coffee on himself and he just goes, "Oh, my balls are on fire!" And it's just dropped in there really, like, subtly and quickly. And it's funny. Or there's
I think counterbalance. He says something like, "To get be your serious."
Dignity,
yeah. He just, you know, there's lots of really funny lines. It was really, like Abby, you were saying, there's so many good bits, it makes you go, fuck, nail the rest of it, and we'll have a really great movie, but instead we get treated to scenes, like you say, Jimmy, of Wile E. Coyote-like stuff, where, like, the scene where, I know, my clever plan to ruin Ed Norton's career is to turn the cookies into cock shapes. He won't expect that. And then they do the whole musical shitty number, where, I don't know, a piñata comes down, and they have this stupid moment while Ed Norton gurns to camera holding a cock cookie, and then it takes him ages to go, ah, it's a rocket! Yeah. To be honest, I thought it was going to be a hammer, but it's hardly a scandal, pulling a cookie out that looks a bit, ooh, you know.
But then then Robin Williams barges in, and it is like Danny DeVito said, right, just, I'm going to roll film, and you come up with as many names as you
you can. that was, if anything, that it got really creative, and it got funny because there were actually children there, and Robin Williams is just saying as many words for dick as possible.
Was he playing Whose Line Is It Anyway on his own?
Yeah,
it was weird. Before he stormed on, he was just watching through a peephole as well, just this little cutout. It was just, what the hell? This is such a cartoon at this point. Why do we have all this weird?
It is and it isn't. This is completely unrealistic and wacky and dark, and it's and that's funny. And then there's all this mob shit and like, just what? I want to mention before I forget as well. There's another really nice little line that again is funny in the midst of things that aren't. Where it's just after he's dropped Vincent Scavelli, the sniper. And somebody, like, grabs him, and they like, save him, and they're like, are you okay? And he says, oh, I'm kind of fucked up in general, so it's hard to gauge.
Yeah, that was a good line.
That was a great little line.
Speaking of good lines, one of my favourites was, they were, we'll get to the point around this, but the reference was, they're in the funeral, and the Irish Bobsters are all pissed off, and I think the woman says, like, yeah, we'll get that Rainbow Randolph, and we'll cut off his balls and stick him up his ass. And then Ed Norton's like, I think we should get the police to do it. And then the other mobster just goes, I don't think the police would do that.
The police won't do the ball thing.
Yeah, that's not happening.
It's against procedure.
Yeah.
But it's just this kind of funny, really good, sticky comedy, this well-written jokes and funny Robin Williams bits, and Ed Norton's kind of funny, and he's at least believably naive at times.
I was surprised at how much I liked Ed Norton in this, because I do have a problem with him, and like, I thought he was
right. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think he did a really good job, because it would have been very easy for his character to be a total knob and really annoying all the way through.
He's actually quite likable.
Yeah, he's really endearing, and you actually, you know, get on board with his character as well. Yeah. You're kind of really rooting for him and his kind of ethics.
It's almost, at times, his performance is like a prototype, or maybe, I don't know when it came, if it came after or before, but when he's in, I think it's The Score, and he's playing, he does an imitation of a guy with special needs who's pretending to be a janitor in The Score. And I feel like sometimes Edward Norton has got this little party trick he likes to do, which is believable simpleton. And he can really nail it, and in this, I think he does mostly.
The score was the year before this.
Ah, so there he had practice.
There's also a little touch of it in. Have you seen the film Moonrise Kingdom by Wes Anderson?
Yeah.
He has a similar, not kind of special needsy, but definitely naive. Kind of naive and good.
Earnest, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them, but then we have this funny, good written comedy for, you know, people who are discerning comedy fans, and then it's, you know, a few cheap jokes, but then there's really family stuff as well, and then, you know, we have this sort of silly pastiche family movie that's broad, and then they hit us with stuff like, so yeah, we're murdering a character now. Like, they set up a stupid comedy character that isn't funny, and then they just murder them for our sympathy. They're just horrible.
Yeah. Personally, overall, I think the main failing is Danny DeVito's style, in that it just clashes sometimes. It just doesn't work.
I kind of feel like, you know, we always pick films that do this, that the tone is all over the place. I think Death to Smoochie is probably like the peak film, where it's like five different films all just smashed together, and because, again, examples of stuff being really over the top and cartoony, the whole sequence with the setup with the Nazi rally and Randolph being like this psycho doing this like Scottish accent, and there's the close-up shot of his eye as he's trying to like, as he's like twitching and trying to maintain control. And then there's the actual Nazi rally. And then later on, there's the ice show.
Oh my God, yeah. We've got to talk about this because it's like a fucking ice opera. It's like this insane dream ice opera. Not a children's show. I've been to see a children's ice show. Like, I saw Beauty and the Beast on ice. Very entertaining. You know, exactly the film. Charming, musical. Yeah. And but the ice show in this was like a really weird moment where Ed Norton's character is like, I'm going to get real truthful with you guys, and I'm going to tell you about my life in a surreal piece of cinema on ice.
The moment that they put those columns there that had like the Chinese lanterns, the writing on it, I was just looking at this going, I want to go to this, but I don't want it to have anything to do with this film.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, there's a bit where all the like swastika flags come down.
Yeah. It's all about this real-life scandal. Like, it's nothing... Like all that Smoochie is this sort of happy, singing hippo lives in a sort of friendly jungle thing on a TV programme. And then it's all about, like, the actual real-life scandals, the death of a genuine man who died in a rhino costume.
Yeah, I was going to say, they like, wave good... What was the brain damage boxer's...
I want to say Ripper
character's name when he was given his own suit...
Bucci,
that's it. And all, like, he goes to fucking heaven, and they all like wave goodbye. And I was like, I can see sitting down as Adam Resnick. I can imagine being him writing the script, sitting down writing this like over the top opera, and it being funny. Because like I've done that when I've written shit, and I've written like something that over the top and like absurd. Mm. That it's funny to me.
It was funny,
imagine,
though. It wasn't appropriately funny.
Yeah, it was funny, but at this point, the tone of the film has become so messed up that, again, this is another type of comedy.
It's like South Park or Adult Swim or something. It's like, you know, an extra level of fucked up.
I think, like, that, the ice opera is funny in the same way that the Nazi rally scene and the, like, Wile E. Coyote, like, Robin Williams, Roadrunner relationship with Smoochie. But it's a different film than everything else that's going on around it. And it's just, it was so annoying.
And so many characters kind of run out of point. Like, Jon Stewart seems like he's playing a fairly, like, oh, this is going to be a bad guy. It's a TV executive who's just interested in money, and we're going to be moralising and, you know, doing something funny with ethics and bad characters in TV. He's trying to say something about the TV industry. And then it's like, actually, he's not in it that much. It doesn't matter. He's just going to be dispatched later on. It abandons characters as quickly as it makes them up.
Yeah, and then it brings them back to, like, kill them. Like,
you murder them,
Yeah, it's murder Danny DeVito and Jon Stewart. Have you two ever travelled together before? But I guess we will be travelling to the afterlife now, I presume is what that line was meant to be.
Yeah,
like,
I'm still not clear.
I thought there'd be an after the credits moment where the two of them were, like, locked in a box and posted to Timbuktu or something, but that didn't
come. They bring him back just to make him the bad guy. Yeah. And yet, it's the same time where they're like, remember that Danny DeVito has been the villain the whole time? Well, he hasn't, but okay.
Like, yeah, if anything, he's just been a little bit exploitative.
Yeah. But he's been fairly supportive, too, so... Yeah. What?
He was very successful in getting him all of the rights and creative control. I just didn't understand why the Irish mobsters were okay. They were a horrible, extorting kind of mafia group. And they literally bully Ed Norton when he's in his office. They, like, imply they're going to beat him up. And he's like, hey, yeah, I'll do what you want. We'll put the boxer in the show. And then from then on, they're, like, his buddies.
Good guys. They're just fine. They're like, all his kind of moral qualms have just dissipated.
Yeah,
like,
he didn't kill anyone.
A bit ill when, like, they mention, like, they chopped off someone's head. Yeah. But he's still, you know, he doesn't go to the police about anything or anything like that. He's kind of just accepts them.
Yeah. And they're all these weird, bad accent Irish people. Like, they're kind of actors who are ginger or wear a flat cap, therefore they're Irish, and they do a very awkward accent.
I have to say, I did not recognise Pam Ferris.
Oh, wow.
I was quite convinced that she was an actual Irish lady.
I know. I also I did like the fact that she was called Tommy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I liked it or why
it was
I thought
in the script
that
to be a
funny.
Man. They just couldn't be asked to change the name.
Yeah.
I thought they were not convincing actors though. Well, I thought they were terrible accents.
Her accent was very Irish, but also sometimes Welsh and sometimes Scottish. And she's from, is she German? She's not American.
I can't remember. The thing I've only ever really seen her in is The Darling Buds of May, and that was.
Oh yeah, yeah. She's German.
Did you get that from The Darling Buds of May?
Set in Yorkshire.
Yeah, yeah. Classic German sitcom, Darling Buds of May.
Is it Yorkshire or the West Country they're all from? They've got like proper farmer accents all the way through.
Did anyone fucking watch and enjoy?
My mum loves Darling Buds of Me. Loves it. And Catherine Zeta-Jones kind of started her career off there, didn't she?
Oh, there you go. Strangely enough, the Welsh accent thing, she grew up in Bridgend, or near Bridgend. Her parents
not German then?
Well, she was born in Germany, but her parents were Welsh. And she grew up in Aberkenvig, near Bridgend.
We're learning. That's good. Actually, on the topic of lazy characters, the one I found slightly odd is the female TV executive who works for Jon Stewart's character.
Oh my god, I so didn't care one bit about their relationship.
Well, I probably, because there's like a handbrake turn midway through the movie where she's kind of an uncaring bitch, and then suddenly she's like, do you know what? I think I'll just fall in love with Ed Norton for a minute.
Yeah. Well, the catalyst is she sees him topless. So she sees his, like, skinny mid-90s Scott Weiland physique. She's like, oh, I'll have a bit of that. And also, it does turn out she's got, like, this weird fetish for, like, kids' TV.
Yeah, this is weird.
I thought that was quite funny, idea of her being, like, a groupie for, like...
Yeah. Like,
but they don't play on it enough.
Like, no, that's a serious issue in their relationship. She sort of explains it with, no, it's fine, I'm really in love with you. And it's like, if you've gone out with every mascot from a TV show there's ever been, you have a serious psychological problem that literally stems back to your childhood when you presumably fell in love with this weird hippo character, and now you just have a serial relationship with every current television mascot. You're wrong,
like,
lady.
Everything that comes up in this film... They don't make anything of it once it comes up. Like, it's not like she makes him keep a part of his costume on or something. Like,
do me with a rhino horn.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, that's an easy fucking joke. Like, it's right there. And I thought that's what they were going
to
do.
Stuff to pan out better. Like, there's some good setups and starts to comedy, and it doesn't. It just goes another idea instead. It's very odd. Like, there's lots of really funny moments. It's really irking how you'd be bored out of your mind wanting it to end, and then it'll be like, oh, that bit was good, wasn't it? Like,
I know, it raises your hopes, because you start getting bored, and then something funny happens, you're like, oh, maybe this will get better, and it just keeps fucking doing it for the whole film.
Oh my gosh, you just said something about spunk, I'm suddenly listening.
Yeah.
There's some really weird swearing in it. I kind of like it at times, but other times it seems like your family tone is so rubbish. Like, just the comedy sometimes has got that, like, moralizing family bullshit, and then it's like fuck shit fuck and then like midget jokes, but then it also has a kind of sympathetic midget character or dwarf possibly. Like, it's just weird.
What, like, and it gets to the end, like, once everything's cleared up, apparently I guess Smoochie and Rainbow Randolph team up now and they have a show together.
They put on a spectacular final moment where Robin Williams dressed in a rainbow, you know, suit, and Ed Norton in a big purple rhino costume, do a big special dance and sing on ice. I mean, it's and then they're not only on ice and doing amazing choreographed ice skating, but then they're doing wire work, jumping onto a giant rainbow.
The
woman turns up that Anthony didn't seem to like.
I assumed that was Rainbow Randolph's complete psychotic episode. Yeah.
I think you're giving the film more credit. But it's like so much of it is just half done. Like, they keep making jokes about Rainbow Randolph possibly being gay and in the closet.
That doesn't go anywhere, though. It's kind of funny that he's... I liked it when Robin Williams was bringing it up that you probably think he was gay, don't you? And it's like, it keeps being implied that maybe he does have this issue, and then it doesn't really
Like, yeah, like everything else. It's funny when it comes up, and then it just peters out. And
what we need is after the credits, or in the credits, we need some videos to run, like our films often have, of all the conclusions to these set-up jokes. We need the dudes being posted, like to Timbuktu. We need Robin Williams having a gay, happy relationship. You know, we want some reveals to some of these setups.
Imagine if this film directly led into The Birdcage.
I was about to say that.
Or Awakening.
I was just going to say, that's exactly what I was expecting at the end. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, there's definitely going to be little bits now of, like, all the little conclusions. And I watched right until the end of the credits for it, and I felt really sad when nothing happened.
It felt like, how obvious must it be if we're all sitting there thinking, well, there'll be a bit now where they show... Like, if they hadn't have killed that guy, the assassin at the end, he definitely would have been in the clinic. They didn't show that opening and, like, being...
Yeah.
And they didn't show loads of kids eating the new healthy food that had not been invented. It's so many bits that were really obvious that they avoided.
One of the because this again, like I said, this was a bomb, like critically and at the box office when it came out. And one of the things, I think it was Leonard Maltin, the film critic, said, and I think he gave it one of the like most violently scathing reviews. But one of the things he said, which I think exactly right, is basically, who was this made for?
Yeah,
like who is the audience for this?
Jaded TV mascots with a crutch.
Yeah, like it's like, and I would understand if this was just like a personal pet project for Danny DeVito or Adam Resnick or whatever. And it, like, I can see elements of that there. Like, it's saying things that he obviously has experience with, but it doesn't. Like, there's not enough to it, even in that aspect.
Like, it's satirical, and yet it's cock jokes. It's family, and yet it's full of swearing. It's kind of this terrible, all-over-the-place hodgepodge of good ideas, but they need to be separated out, or just, you know, be one thing or the other. Don't be... Either be fully adult and, like, a proper, ridiculous, kind of Adult Swim type thing, or be a family movie, be a bit more saccharine, a bit more...
Yeah, it doesn't...
Straight-laced.
It has a million different ideas, and it doesn't run with any of them.
Yeah.
So none of them come to any kind of, like, satisfying or enjoyable conclusion. It's just all over the fucking place.
The whole film itself is kind of like the unfettered mind of Robin Williams, where it's just, here's a crazy bit, here's a crazy bit, here's a crazy bit, nothing relates, let's move on, blah, blah, blah. Let's
it's like when he, like, again, if we're talking about, like, bipolar, this is like a manic episode.
Mm. Yeah. There's some really dark bits to mix in.
Yeah, elements of the depression, like, creeping to the surface.
Yeah, it's definitely somehow a reflection of the inner workings of Robin Williams' head.
And it's,
I just, like, I have my metaphor now. Thanks.
I think he was nominated for a Razzie for this, which
I have to say, this is probably the worst performance I have seen from Robin Williams in a film.
I think that's a bit harsh, though, because I did laugh. Like, yeah. I did find bits funny. To be truly abysmal, it would have to be irritating at every turn. And you were irritated, were you?
I really was. Like, there was. I think it was just too much. I think maybe because he was so angry all the time, it didn't feel right.
I was going to say, again, this is another example of the film doing things by half measures. If they'd made him, like, properly, like, evil, but still cartoony, like he was in certain sequences, like the bit where he's, like, pretending to be Scottish and sets at the Nazi rally, that stuff, that was funny. Because
he looked like Bryan Cranston when he was playing the...
Yeah. But it's like, I like the idea of, like, of him almost playing, like, an evil version of the genie from Aladdin. Like, I like that, and that could have worked.
But then he has horrible redemption, like a family movie, where he stops waving a gun around, starts crying, and then everyone makes friends because Ed Norton is too fucking reasonable.
But Anthony, is this performance really worse than Barry Munchausen?
Yeah.
But that's just a cameo. He has the main performance.
No, yeah, you say it's a cameo, but when he appears as the floating head, whatever, moon bollocks in Baron Munchausen, it's so grotesquely unpleasant that I would rather watch this film four times in a row than sit through that 15 eternal fucking minutes of Baron Munchausen him farting and ejaculating all over whatever the fuck he's doing. sloppy eater good. Oh, God,
I think I think he was at his best in this film when he was improvising, I suppose. Yeah. But I can't help but think that it was more the fault of Danny DeVito directing him.
Yes, I think you're right.
Him.
And I think there were moments as well where I did get, and it was like that Robin Williams syndrome, where it was like, oh, stop.
Yeah. Also, it should have got cut.
Yeah.
Also, the bits where they actually would do, like when they showed the TV shows that these children's presenters did, like they opened with Robin Williams singing this awful happy song about some crap and accepting people of all different colours and stuff. And he looks like a douche. Like, he looks a bit like he does in Toys, just as if one of the costumes from Toys that got rejected was used. And they brought him out and he just kind of... The show seemed horrible. It wasn't anything like, you know, Sesame Street. He wasn't even as good to look at. He didn't even look as good as Barney. And for some reason, it seemed funny to have loads of, like, dwarfs dressed up. But it's like, what the heck is this? And then when Ed Norton is Smoochy, Smoochy's show was horrible as well. They were even crapper than some of the most abysmal kind of Teletubbies-style...
Again,
actual
though,
shows that exist.
That whole, like, the way they do Rainbow Randolph's show with, like, the I don't even know what the correct term is anymore. If it's dwarfs, midgets, little people, whatever. The miniature actors and children and, like, that, and then Smoochie's show, like, the way they're presented, again, like a lot of things in this film, there's the potential to be funny there, but it's not done properly. Like, it's half done, and it just doesn't work. And it's like this whole film is just a collection of half-assed ideas.
Like one of the points where like a TV executive cancels both shows, like at one point and then another point, you kind of go, "Oh, rerun of cartoons? That's a genius idea." Yes, leave the rerun of cartoons on. Problem solved. We never have to watch these horrible presenters sing and song at us ever again. Just a thought. Prefer cartoons. That's all.
It's just. It's not that it's... I would be happier if the film had just been utter shit from start to finish and I could just throw it in the bin and be like, right, well, that was a load of fucking wank. I don't care. But it's not. There's the seed of something really good in it. And
it's annoying.
It doesn't sprout. Like, it's just... and it's... It's so frustrating. It's infuriating.
My metaphor for the end. It's like Barney the Dinosaur. You can see there's some potential, but it's really irritating and frustrating.
it's a good idea in here, but you fucked it up.
It's the most tedious thing I could ever imagine, but at least children are entertained, although no one is entertained really by this.
No, and that's the thing. Like, this is a film that like barely even has a cult following. Like, it's because again, like Leonard Maltin said, who is this for?
Yeah, nobody.
Who did they make this and think, there's some audience here? Because even like bizarre, like misguided or like niche films, like, again, I always come back to it. This actually did remind me of Super Mario Brothers in that, like, completely weird, like, why did you make this? Kind of, like, what are you trying, like, who are you appealing to? And I think it reminded me a lot of Super Mario Brothers in that it's just this mess. And again, I'm sure plenty of people disagree, but I think Super Mario Brothers, there's a potential in that film for a really strange, imaginative take on an idea that just doesn't go anywhere. Because
well, the key concept of Death to Smoochy is good. It's like a nice idea, but they add too much and spoil it with too many ingredients. Anthony, what about Toys, right? Is it Robin Williams better or worse in Toys?
He's much better in Toys. I
want to get laid.
Because, I mean, Toys is a weird and unpleasant film, but it's interesting.
I'm not saying Toys. I'm saying the character in Toys.
A performance. Okay.
Yeah. Although saying that, Robin Williams is one of the more likable ones in Toys. It's everyone else who's kind of obnoxious and annoying.
Mm.
So yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. He just in this film, he just rubbed me the wrong way, practically all the way through. It's like, yes, he had a few good lines, but it just wasn't enough. I think this was really one of his most poor performances that I've seen.
Mm.
Fair enough. Right, so, Abby, you said you had a sort of idea for a rating. I'm going with it's like Barney the Dinosaur. There's something good about it, but I can't stand how much it annoys me, and it's just obnoxious. So that's why, and it's full of purpleness. This film is full of big purple fur and fluff.
Not that you've got anything against purple in general.
No, I'm all right with purple form, but when it's formed into the shape of a saccharine animal that is trying to talk to me about love and funny silliness, I want to strangle it to death.
Metaphor. This film is if Robin Williams had been all of the celebrity guests on Celebrity Squares. And he'd be one box to another. A couple of them would work and he'd nail it. And then there'd be another box where you're just going, I don't even know who you're pretending to be.
He would just do a different accent. He'd be like, Southerner, Russian. And then he would be New Yorker. And then he would be like, I don't know, he does do quite a range of celebrity voices as well.
That's just given me my metaphor, which is similar but not exactly the same.
Okay. So Abby, how is it like Robin Williams being all of the people in Celebrity Squares?
Because there is the frame of this story works. There was the actual infrastructure of the script could have worked.
The game show concept works. You play noughts and crosses with trivia.
Yeah.
Yeah. But inside of that is this incredibly patchy experience where there are elements that work and are very good, and there are elements that don't work and you don't even understand.
Yeah.
And they're fairly divorced from each other as well. It's not like there's one thing that makes sense, then doesn't make sense, then does. It's, that bit made sense, but for some reason it's next to this thing that doesn't.
Yeah, bottom left, you got, 1 hour photo Robin Williams. Then next to that, you got Robin Williams from Toys. Then next from that, you got him as Peter Pan in Hook. And then up one, you've got all of the different, you're getting the good and the bad. You've got the Mork, and you've got the, what's he really terrible in, other than this?
Yeah, Jack.
Yeah, there's some really...
Patch Adams.
Oh, Patch Adams. Oh, dear. Oh, God almighty. And that's probably... Patch Adams is my least favourite.
Are you sure that this is your least favourite Robin Williams?
Yeah.
Okay, now that you remind me of Patch Adams and Jack, perhaps, but it's down there for me.
He's still bottom five somewhere.
Yeah.
Every now and again, you get a little bit of Good Morning Vietnam, top right. When they cut to him and ask him questions, charming and funny. They cut to some of the other Robin Williamses, scary and creepy.
Yeah.
Good metaphor, Abby.
Thank you.
Jamie.
I remember years ago, Robin Williams was on a TV chat show. It might have been like Parkinson. It was a British one.
Mm.
But he was doing accents like he did. And I remember him doing this like stream of consciousness going from one accent to the next.
Mm.
And he did British ones. And he did, like, Scottish, Irish, English, and then he did Welsh. And, like, they were all decent, and then with Welsh, he basically just did Pakistani.
Yeah.
It's a thin line, but it's sounding Indian and sounding Welsh. Yeah. Very thin line.
This is, like, when he does that, like, or when he did that stream of consciousness thing with all those accents one after the other on that chat show. Some of them were, like, again, and, like, the Celebrity Squares thing, like some of them were really good, like right on point, exactly how like somebody would sound, and then some of them were like clearly an exaggeration but still funny.
Yeah, like Mrs. Doubtfire Scottish voice is a little bit cartoony, but you can buy into it a bit.
But then some of them were just like, what is this? Like, where have you heard this fucking mess of an accent that you've just fucking pulled out of your ass? Like, and that's what's happening here. It's just, it's almost like this stream of consciousness of just like ad lib. It's like, if you can imagine what it would be like actually sitting in the studio audience at the filming of an episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Because right.
what we get in like the 30 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever episode is, you know, it's obviously the funniest stuff. Can you imagine all the shit that you have to sit at an actual taping of an episode? Because for the most part, improvised comedy is fucking awful.
It's just, and, yeah, for every time they strike gold, there's so much other slag and waste material.
Especially when, like, it's almost like watching, like, if you could imagine watching an improv comedy show at, like, a college that a drama class has put together.
Ugh.
And it, oh, yeah, do you see what I mean? Like, it's just a bunch of fucking teenagers just being random, and it's like, oh, fuck off.
So, yeah, Smoochie is just that kind of, you know, for every laugh you get, there's a lot that the editor needs to get out and get rid of.
Am-dram fucking improv comedy. Oh, fuck right. off.
Yeah, that's Jamie's message. Just am-dram, piss off. Don't improvise, write a good script. And not a smoochy script. Write a very well edited down, get rid of the superfluous character script. And don't waste our fucking time with mixed tone. Anthony?
Yes?
Any final metaphor?
I don't know. I kind of like the kind of unfettered stream of stuff coming out of Robin Williams's head, because there's obviously going to be nuggets of gold, but just trying to comprehend it all together, you will just be overwhelmed and it'll hurt you, kind of thing, and that's kind of what happens. But also, I suppose you could say it's like the message of the film, where you've taken something kind of good and wholesome and you've bastardized it and you've marketed it in a certain way. Ooh. And you've just added all this crap on top just to make money. And that's kind of what the film is in itself.
It's clearly not done to make money in the first place. And if it succeeded in anything, it was not making any money.
Yeah. Plus, your metaphor, Anthony, takes more thought. The film starts off with that concept in mind, and then it slowly goes, actually, let's just have a saccharine happy ending where everyone's back on TV and everyone we didn't like is dead or presumed dead.
It's usually, I have a really hard time coming up with a metaphor at the end, but I've come up with like three already, and now like the other one is it is like watching someone who has like bipolar going through a manic episode and then a dip, but compressed into like 2 hours.
So in a way, I watched a documentary about Robin Williams' life, and it was interesting, but it was a very standard documentary, tell you about his life, his highs, his lows.
This is
2 hours of this, and you'll have an insight into what Robin Williams was like. You may not understand but there are ice skating rhinos, so
you won't have an insight into what he was like. You'll have an insight into what he was going through,
what his mind is like
inside.
Maybe.
Well, I think overall this film hangs on a thread, and that like the only thing stopping it collapsing completely is Edward Norton's performance. Like,
you know, I never would ever want to say that about a film, but you're right.
It's like if it was someone else, this film would have been an absolute failure. But somehow he keeps a shred of something.
But
again, it's a shame, because I like Danny DeVito. I wanted this to be good.
Well, I think Robin Williams counterbalances Ed Norton to some extent as well. Like, Edward Norton on his own would have been awful if there had been the contrast of Robin Williams. So they kind of help each other out, even though it still sucks.
Exactly what I'm talking about, though. If it had just been the two of them and they're like clashing of heads with the same comedy, like over-the-top comedy that some parts of the film have, brilliant. It could have been brilliant. It could have been fucking brilliant, but it wasn't.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what we thought. I think all the analogies were pretty right on. If I was to try, outside of my poor attempt at a Barney the Dinosaur reference, I would say, like his stand-up for me, his stand-up is, because so much of it is ad-libbed and crowd interaction and just, you know, it's some of it's, you know, workshopped bits and actual comedy he's come up with and is repeating, but because he just lets it all free flow, you know, it gets patchy because improvisation isn't honed as much, and therefore there's bits that suck. And the script needed honing, and if it had been, it could have been a success. And, you know, I think it's a shame, but, you know, what can you do? Can't go back and undo it all. More to the pity. Plus, I find it creepy that there's like a... Like, children... Can children love like a big rhino that has a man's face in its mouth? I find that's weird. Like, Barney the dinosaur, to all his faults, he doesn't have a man's face in his top.
I'm going to disagree with you there. I would rather see a face sticking out there than Barney the dinosaur's horrific Five Nights at Freddy's visage.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative perhaps is Jim Carrey's face coming out of a rhinoceros's arse in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. And on that image, God, that's a really traumatising and kind of funny scene in Ace Ventura. Yeah. It's horrible, but yet compelling. Anyway, that had nothing to do with anything. Are we all good? Are we all done?
Do you want one of my other metaphors not have that as the last one?
I don't think we can have too many. We've had like two each now, I think. You may as well have your second one, Abby.
There's trending advertising at the moment that, in particular, I think it's Ribena or some other kind of squash.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's having lots of like photoshopped animals. So they've got like human lips and hats.
Collage
style. All weird colours. And at first, it's all right. You can sort of take it in. It's like, okay, there's that weird thing over there. There's that weird thing over there. And then it gets to this tipping point where there's too many and you just go, I'm afraid now. I'm just scared in the dark at what's going on.
Those weird Orangina adverts with the anthropomorphic sexy animals. I was like, ugh, Jesus Christ, what are you trying to sell me?
Well, fucking oranges. That is a different issue for a different time, Jamie.
Yeah.
So we're all going to go to TV mascots therapy. It's group therapy. There's a lot of other people. Captain Kangaroo's there. You know, all the greats.
I'm not. I'm going on safari, motherfucker.
See, Robbie Williams was funny in that film, despite his sometimes grating performance. There have been moments, even, of gold.
Seconds
so.
of comedy.
It was a rainbow Randall of quality.
Oh.
I'm sorry. We could have ended so nicely on Abby's metaphor, but I kept talking.
I think it's time for this episode to pour petrol all over itself.
Set itself on fire in the middle of New York.
Fire in Times Square.
Yeah, so I'm going to get the matches. Jamie, you get the petrol. The rest of you call the media, and we'll see you next time if we're not burnt alive.
Hold back the little girl so she doesn't stop us.
Yeah. Yeah, we can keep fingers crossed there'll be a little girl to stop us burning ourselves alive. But if not, commiserations and goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.